The 5 Live World Cup Daily.
Welcome to a special extra World Cup Daily. Out of Africa, the future of English football. Myself and Chris Waddle, along with guests such as Howard Wilkinson and Terry Venables, examine the reasons behind England's World Cup failure and what can be done in the future to improve the international game. We started by listening again to Chris's passionate comments, which came immediately after England's defeat on Sunday.
The FA just sit on the backside and do nothing after tournament after tournament. Why don't they listen? Why don't they look at other countries and say, how do they keep producing talent? We coach out, I keep telling you, we coach talent out of players. We're looking for Steven Gerrard, Wayne Rooney. They haven't turned up at this tournament. Steven Gerrard's had his half decent, but they haven't turned up. So where do we go? Where's the plan B? We haven't got one. We say, oh, we've got pacey wingers who can... We haven't got players who can run. But overall, the back four, can I control it? Can I pass it? We lack so many ideas, and it's so frustrating. The amount of money in our league is frightening, and all we do is waste it on rubbish ideas.
Chris Waddle, summing up what I'm sure everyone watching and listening to England's World Cup felt yesterday at 6:15. Good evening, I'm Mark Chapman. This is 5 Live Sport. In the next hour, we'll be trying to find some answers to the questions Chris asked of the game in England. No rants this evening, just your solutions. And to help you, you will hear the views tonight of Terry Venables, Howard Wilkinson, Todd Grip, Dietmar Hamann, the former chief executive of the Football Association, Mark Palios, and the man who captured a nation's feelings so succinctly. Good evening, Chris Waddle.
Hello.
A much calmer Chris Waddle. But as a nation, as a group of football fans, why should we feel as angry as you felt at the final whistle last night?
Just purely because we invented the game as such. We've never took it on since 66, probably, if you look back. Well, yeah, 70, we've had some decent teams. I would probably say I was fortunate to play one of the better sides, 1990. 96 at Wembley, we nearly won the Euros. Terry very unlucky there. But from then, it's just deteriorated. And I think the introduction of, obviously, TV companies who've put a lot of money into it, they've basically spoilt it. We've not used the money wisely. I watch all types of football, all age groups, and it's got worse. It's all about results, even at 7 and 8 now. And it's not good enough for the amount of money we generate as a country in football. We don't use it wisely. We don't use it right. Mm. And our methods are very poor. They're very dated. And unfortunately, a lot of countries have moved on well ahead of us now.
This isn't going to be a rant tonight. This is looking for solutions. We're going to look at everything from grassroots football to the FA to the Premier League to Fabio Capello to the winter break. It isn't just the usual media hyperbole, I promise you. But before we get stuck in, I think it's important that we take a rain check of where England is at the moment. The good news is on the way, but first, we have an England team that has just suffered the worst World Cup result ever in the country's history. We last reached semi-finals of a major tournament 20 years ago. We have a manager who's paid £6 million a year, recently signed a new deal, and he'll leave the decision over his future to the chairman of the Premier League, Sir Dave Richards, who is also currently in charge of the FA, because they don't have a chairman. We don't have a technical director. The last one was Howard Wilkinson, and he left in 2002, 8 years ago. We don't have a centre of excellence, but we do have a £757 million national stadium that doesn't even have a good pitch. The good news, I promised you, England under-17s beat Spain to win the European Championships, our first title since 1993. That is where we are tonight. So in 1997, Howard Wilkinson, in his role as the Football Association's technical director, published the Charter for Quality, a paper that aimed to see an England team in a World Cup final in 2010. I promise you, that emergency siren wasn't meant to coincide with the dire state of where we are. Anyhow, many of Wilkinson's recommendations, including a national football centre, never saw the light of day. Wilkinson has been telling 5 Live's Brian Alexander why yesterday's result left him more frustrated than ever.
The last time round we were promised root and branch change. We didn't get root and branch change, and that's part of the problem in this country. The fact is that this is a Football Association issue, and the Football Association now has lost a lot of its power and a lot of its authority.
because it's run really by the top Premier League clubs, in effect?
That's one reason. Of course, it's not the only reason. The Premier League is rightly called the best domestic league in the world, and that's the place where you see the best football in the world. And, you know, going right back to the charter...
Let me just stop you there. That was the Charter for Quality in 1998 that you instigated and you were in charge of, yes?
Well, basically, yes, because when I was asked my opinion about the way English football should go, I said English football should look at the Premier League and recognise that it was going to be a threat to international football. There was no doubt in my mind that it would grow in strength. That growth in strength would be reflected in finance coming into it. It would attract the best players. So a huge part of the thinking with regard to the Charter for Quality, if you like, be proactive with regard to the development of players who could play and compete at the top for England.
So was that looking at coaching methods, at strategy, at our sort of technical side of the game? The whole issue right from the grassroots?
It was looking at all those facets that one needs to look at when you're looking for success in international football, because international football is totally different to domestic football. And in particular, tournament football is something that players never ever experience other than when they are playing international football. It was necessary, and I thought it was necessary, to do a lot of research initially into the reasons why teams in the past have been successful, and then to set out from 14, 15 years old on a strategy that would try to ensure that the players who might represent England got a comprehensive international education that was coordinated from 15 through to 21.
So what happened to the Charter for Quality once you handed it over to the FA in 1998?
It gradually was chipped away at, eroded through politics, through change. Probably the FA's record for chief executives is as bad as football's record for managers. So it was eroded. The commitment to drive it forward disappeared. One only has to look at the abandonment at the time of the NFC because of Wembley. And my view at the time was you can't afford not to do National Football Centre. And my fear now is that we genuinely identified this group between 98 and 2000 as the group that could go on to achieve success in 2006, maybe semi-final, and in 2010 definitely should be serious final contenders. And the disappointment for me is that I do not see us bringing together players of this quality in the same numbers as we progress through the years, because undoubtedly the pool of players from whom we will be choosing in 4 years will be smaller than the pool now. And that will continue.
Am I right in saying, Howard, that your ideas that were within the Charter for Quality were actually excited other European football governing bodies, including the German FA? Am I right that the German FA actually picked up on quite a few of your ideas?
Well, we all do. We constantly, I mean, in putting the charter together, not only did I do research inside of England, but in Europe, in South America, in Brazil. So we all are looking for examples of best practice. And indeed, Clive Woodward came to see me and used some of the thinking for international success with regard to how he took on the job of managing England in the World Cup. So we all do that. And yet, parts of what we were doing gave the Germans a germ of a thought that they needed to be more proactive about the development of young players and development of international players. Just like France in 98, after such a revolution, what you're seeing is a generation of German players, and the thing about that is, unless the Premier League or Sky switches attention to the Bundesliga, away from the Premier League, that, that they will have that opportunity to develop those players.
Chris, it is an emotional Howard Wilkinson in that interview. I think a frustrated Howard Wilkinson, because the FA were warned that this could happen.
Well, again, it's where's the money gone? And, you know, all right, people say it's gone out to Wembley. And, you know, we've been crying out for years about a structure of how can we produce players. You know, we used to just produce players for jumpers from goalposts, let's be honest. You know, got signed up with 14. You didn't go to clubs who were 13, signed up with 14 and 16. You were lucky if you got an apprenticeship, and that's how it worked. But there was hundreds and hundreds of kids, but a lot of talented kids. You know, now they grab them at 7 and 6. And, you know, not just professional clubs. I'm on about grassroots as well in the start. And, you know, and that's where it starts, really, for me. If you, you know, you've got to identify the talent and what players are good at and not what, and work on what they're not, and obviously work harder on what they're good at to make it better. But, you know, it's unfortunately, we've just gone down a cul-de-sac, and it's very frustrating because the amount of cash we generate, it's frightening compared to other leagues. But they've got the structure right. And you look at Spain as an example now, and France did it for years, and France will come again. There's no doubt about that. Obviously, what's happened to France will wake them up. Spain will definitely. But you've got to get people in the right places. You know, people who are football people, put them in. You know, Spain have them, France have them, Germany have them. They have people actually around the setup who have played the game, know the game, and know what's good for the country. We don't. We just think, well, we earn that money, we'll give them that much, and we've got a little bit left. Oh, we'll tell you what, we'll start this little games, little scheme, coaching scheme, and everybody thinks, oh, they're putting the money back in. They're not. It's rubbish.
Let's just take the French thing in Clairefontaine, because that national centre that they had certainly set them up for their 98 success, didn't it? And seeing how the French did, it was obviously one of the reasons why Howard suggested the National Football Centre for us here in England. How important is a National Football Centre, do you think?
Well, it's like anything. It could be a waste if you don't get the right people in and they don't learn the good habits. Now, it's very hard. I always say this. Unless you've played international football, it's very difficult to say, you know, the Premier League's got a lot of foreign players, but the Premier League's basically, in my eyes, always been a basketball league. You know, you have an attack, they have an attack. Mm. Other leagues don't play like that. When I was on my little bit of rant yesterday, then, you know, Werder Bremen, Schalke, Bayern Munich play the same way as Germany play. We try and play international football like the Premier League, doesn't happen. We can't keep the ball. International football's about getting the ball. We used to send players abroad. You know, my 3 years in Marseille learnt me so much about football, which I would never have learned staying in England. You know, we used to say, now people come to England and players stay in England, so they don't get the experience of what it's like to play in a team who actually keep the ball at the back. And probably the team who play the nearest to that is Arsenal, and there's no Englishman playing that team.
The subject of the experience and using people with football knowledge, and Howard Wilkinson is a prime example there. I'm just going to tell you some of the points that were in his charter for quality. Youngsters should play no more than 30 games a year. All youth coaches to be better trained and facilities improved. The National Football Centre to be set up that would offer support such as physical, mental welfare of players. Focus of training to be on technical skills with games on small size pitches. And this is astonishing, I think. Focus on 4-3-3 formation, which will increasingly be key to international success. Now, you talk to a man on the street about Howard Wilkinson, they'll go 4-4-2, long ball man, dinosaur. That's a forward-thinking charter. And we have a massive problem in this country, Chris, don't we, of stereotyping our elder generation, our elder football managers, and pigeonholing them. And yet they have a font of knowledge that we need to tap into.
Well, Howard's learnt. He got success playing a certain way with Sheffield Wednesday at first, then on to Leeds, won the league. Certain style of play. And as you say, once you play a certain way, you'll always be pigeonholed. You'll always have that target. But he's obviously went off, which we needed, which was great, because normally we're blinkered. It's like we're England, we don't copy anybody. He's went off, he's looked at Holland, France, Germany. He's looked at other ideas, how to get the best out of players, a good idea. But again, it's anything else. You know, if you look at we've got Trevor Brooken basically fighting a long battle. You know, Howard was here for a while. Obviously, he moved on, and the plans basically got pushed under.
Why do we cast people onto the scrap heap? I don't get it. On this trip, you sit up and have a beer with Graham Taylor, and he has so much knowledge and he has so much insight, and yet he's still lambasted somewhat because of his failure to get to one World Cup with England. And yet his knowledge, his contacts, his experiences, and he's football wise he's not on a scrap heap, he's Watford chairman and he does fantastic stuff for us, but the FA don't tap into anything he says, his knowledge.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. They just sort of shut the door on everything, and it's like, you know, it's like a job for the boys, isn't it? Let's be honest. That's what it is.
Yeah.
If you look at it, they're getting obviously good salaries, they're earning good money, and as long as that money keeps pumping in from the sponsors, i.e. TV companies, whatever, they're quite happy to say, look, as long as we qualify, the fans will be happy. But unfortunately for them, they didn't think we were going to get thumped off Germany and play like we have in this tournament. Now, within the next few weeks, there'll be big decisions. Burton's going to get built again. We're going to get the best coaches. We're going to look at how Germany have developed their players. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And within 2 years, we'll qualify the Euros and they'll go, put it back under the carpet. We're not going to use it now. We're all right. The fans are happy. We've qualified for the Euros. Then we'll have another disaster and it'll be, yep, let's get the plans back out again. It'll never happen. It'll never happen.
I nearly ranted then, and I promised that I wouldn't rant tonight, didn't I? So 850-58 on the text if you want to give us some of your solutions to the problem. Here are some of your texts. Andy in Stockport. Chris is spot on. I watch kids' football every week. Everything's win-win-win, often via bully boy football. Launch it and press. Fear football. It's not conducive to producing intelligent players. As a coach who's worked with local youth teams, says Brian in Gloucester, centre of excellence teams, and I now run a thriving business introducing 2 to 4 year olds to football. I have to say that too much grassroots junior football is coached by well-meaning parents with no real technical coaching skills. FA level 1 is a Muppet badge. It's almost impossible to fail. Doesn't include technical skills. We need to concentrate on the team that Pierce had 2 years ago at the under 23s with Noble, Stephen Taylor, etc. Bring in the current under 17s to bed them in and just let them express themselves, says Ed in Aylesbury. I'm sick of seeing players collect the ball with their right foot, turn to the right and pass the ball on. Every player should be forced to practice using both feet, and that way you have the basis to develop skills. Virtually all of those texts are about grassroots coaching. Let's move on to this subject, because the former FA chief executive, Mark Palios, the man who brought Sir Trevor Brooking into the organisation, believes the problem lies in the lack of quality and quantity of coaches.
This is an example of where things have not changed. If we talk about talent identification, in other words, do we hoover up all the good talent that we've got? I think we probably do, because the professional clubs do actually pick up most of the kids, and you might argue at too early an age. But they, of course, will only have their own fiefdom to look at, and so they will have a certain limited number of coaches there. And to my mind, when I looked at the French system, what they actually had was I think there was a guy in the 80s had a vision of one village, one pitch, one coach. And so we haven't approached it at all from that. And so historically we've come from a position whereby we just need a massive investment in that whole area to see consistency. And it still pains me to see guys who are clearly volunteers, who are the bread and butter of the English game upon which it's built, the foundations of the English game, who will give their time up as fathers. But I saw one individual making his son do sort of shuttle runs aged about 6 or 8. And total misapplication of energy and resource and enthusiasm, and probably turned the kid off. In fact, the kid was crying, so it was right. But I think the difficulty there is getting to some extent, the arrogance of the professional clubs saying, we know best.
There's an awful lot to pick up there. One village, one pitch, one coach in France. That'd be fantastic if we could do that in England and Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland.
Well, you would, but, you know, it's like level one, you know. You're talking about badges and whatever. And I'll be honest, I don't believe. I've always been anti, because I just couldn't understand how, you know, people telling you certain things. Yeah, you need a foundation, but that's basically the same level one or same level two, which has been for the last 30 Charles Hughes and whoever. It's only been altered slightly. You know, we've got to look at it to say, right, this is what we need to do. We don't need leagues up to 13, 14. I don't think. We need to just educate footballers. It should be all ball work. It should be. But it should get... and if you're 6 inches bigger than somebody else at the same age, straight away in England, I used to stand in and go, he's a centre-half, him. And you think, why? Well, he's the tallest. All right. So he's a centre-half. And they put you in a position, and that's you for... And all they say... And when you're in England, when I was in France, I always remember, the kids used to play balls, the little kids, and they used to pass it around. And if anybody clipped it long or hit it long, the coach would go, hey, no, pass. Pass, play. We're in England, all the parents on the touchline, where you go, well done, brilliant. So you're getting encouraged for doing bad habits. And that goes up to 16, 18. Then we say, why can't you play with your right foot as well as your left foot? Why can't you do that? Why can't you bring it down on your chest? Because it's a results business, and the coaches who take them out, hey, it's a hard job. I know it is running football teams. And it's great that people want to get involved. but they should be doing it in the right way. They don't do it. They just think of results for themselves as much as, not as much the kids, for themselves.
There are mums and dads listening to this as we speak. There are probably grannies and grandpas listening to this, all of whom will have some influence in a team that their grandchildren or their son or daughter plays in. I coach my little boys under sevens too. I genuinely believe it's the most important thing that I do every week. It matters so much to me, and it matters so much to a lot of people who are texting in. And this Muppet badge that guy texting in is probably right. I have to be CRB checks, have to do that badge. If I want to improve and learn coaching, it's going to cost me hundreds of thousands of pounds to do my coaching badges, to learn how to coach children to play football. How can that be right? How can so many well-meaning parents and grandparents who want to put something back, want to help football, want to do it the right way? I want to do it the way you say it. Who's taking hundreds and thousands of pounds off me so that I have to pay to learn how to coach my boy and his friends?
I don't know who's taking it. Obviously, the football league, whoever's getting the football association. But all I'm saying is, it's all right having a level one. Right? Have a level one. That's what you want, for people to work with kids and improve them. But when you go on the course, make it all where you think, and you walk where you think, hey, them drills were brilliant. All about the ball, all about this. We watched DVDs on how Spain play. We watched how Germany beat England, whatever, how they played, how they used the ball. All about stuff like that. So when you walk away from that course, you think, I want to play like Spain. I want to play like thing. I want to play like Brazil. We don't. We go in, you all learn the same thing. It's basically, it's a quick course and it's da-da-da-da. There's your badge, mate. Get out. And basically, you'll think, right, what do? How do you get results? And what you're used to and what you've been told and what parents shout, get it over the top, go on. You've got a kid who's up front, quicks, gets 70 goals a season. By the time he's 16, he's finished, you've never heard of him.
And these coaching courses, are they run by people like you who've played the game? Who are they run by? What, PE teachers?
I haven't a clue. I couldn't tell you who runs a coaching
course. Has anybody from the FA come to you and said, would you help run a coaching course in the North East for parents?
No. No. I've never been asked, no. I've never been. I would think a lot of players haven't been asked. If you're talking about the certain players, I know the certain players went on coaching courses and got their bit level B and whatever, and probably going on to the A now. But that's for their own benefit to hopefully get a professional club. But you know, some people are meant to work with certain people, aren't they? Now, some people are great with first teams, some are great reserves, some are great with kids. But what happens is they get disillusioned, can't get a job because someone will say you're not getting the results. To me, I would always say, even if mate. Under 15s, 14s, 13s, 12s. It's about how many come through the production line in my eyes. Who you think, tell you what, I could play in the first team at 17. Technically good enough to control a ball, pass A to B. Not worry about his size. Because they put it this way, listen, if Messi, Xavi and Iniesta had been English, they would have been released at 15, 16.
85058 on the text. We're getting hundreds of texts this evening. Brian in Melton Mowbray, a think tank made up of people like Waddle, Shearer, Graham Taylor, a premiership manager, etc., who know the game to tell the FA what is needed. No more suits. I completely agree with Chris. My son was at a premiership side a few years ago, age 14. Spoke with a few of the coaches there who explained that they were looking for big, tall lads at that age who had speed and stamina with football skill third. It's crazy. Now we know why we are where we are. No name with that one. We will talk to the director of a Premier League club's academy after 10 o'clock on Five Live. Please buy Chris a pint from me, says Neil in Cornwall. Don't worry, I bought him loads this trip already. Neil in Cornwall says that there was more passion, energy, commitment and sincerity in his assessment of England's performance yesterday than there was in the entire 360 minutes of the crushingly disappointing England World Cup campaign. 850-58 is the text number. Let's hear from Terry Venables now, shall we? The man who led England to the semi-finals of Euro 96 is still regarded as one of the country's sharpest football brains. He says the English FA have got to follow Germany's lead.
They've got four, certainly, in the team, young players, including the goalkeeper. You know, and they're outstanding. People were saying, oh, they're not experienced. Well, they look experienced to me. They don't have to be old to be experienced. You can be old and not experienced anything in your life, in your football life. But these boys are... Boy. But that happens. Sometimes they've got the terrific under-21s. And I know we've got a good group coming underneath. I think they're like 17, 18, 19 group. That just behind. And they're expecting good things from them. Yes, we've got to make that count. But you've got to rely on that at their club. And their coaches has got to be making sure that they are up to date to get them, you know, into a position where they're really, really good. I don't remember Germany having a group of young players in like that before. The FA have got to find out what it is they're doing. Are they just lucky? I don't think they're just lucky.
You said, well, what have the FA got to do? I mean, obviously, since your time, it doesn't appear that nothing seems to have changed, because the only real football man within the Footballers Association with a senior position is Sir Trevor Brooking. There's no one else. They're all suits apart from that. How do you feel about that?
Trevor has had a tough fight, yeah, trying to fight the cause. To what extent, I'm not really sure. But I know he's fought his corner, and often seems like he would like to do other things. I don't know, but
he would. Yes, he would.
Okay. Well, and so therefore, that's going to be uphill battle for him. And I think he finds it hard getting what he wants. Mm. And I think that if he and it's not enough to have won. You've got to try. I mean, Ron Greenwood was to me a terrific coach and an understanding of what's necessary. He put a team together which was Brian Clough and Peter Taylor, the youth team, me and Dave Sexton, the under-21s, and we did win it that year. And then and Howard Wilkinson was with us. And then you had Bobby Robson and Don Howe with a B team. And then you had Ron and Bill Taylor, hmm, who was at Fulham. Now, I mean, that's great for the... Do you imagine working with Cloughy and Bobby Robson and Don Howe and all these guys, young guys coming through? It's got to help. I mean, you've got to have a staff, I think, that you feel is better than you, and you've got to try and educate players that are going to be better than you. That's what Holland always tried to do. Sometimes it developed a monster, but nevertheless, they wanted to learn. They wanted to know the game. We've got to, you know, and Holland is still there doing it on a fairly regular basis with young players coming through.
So just to wrap this up, we've got
to get it off our mind. We've got to get it away, because we invented the game, or because we used to do this. and always we talk about the history. Well, it's interesting, but it's not going to find... That's going to find the answers, but not keep on about the history. We've got to say about today and about the players that come to mind. What are we going to do about it? They do it, and it'll be brushed under the carpet after a few weeks' time.
If you were planning now, thinking, right, 4 years hence, would you now be brave and say, OK, the guys who are heading for 30, or the wrong side of 30, is that it? Do you say goodbye to John Terry, to Frank Lampard?
Why would you do that?
To bring the fresh blood in.
Well, but you see, you've got people. I see also people coming into certain teams, young people, going into international sides, and I have seen it in the past, where they need the experience around them. And it doesn't matter whether it's one or whether it's six. It's a matter of how good they are. And if they're good enough, and that's the right line you go down. And the coach, leave that to the coach. Let him do his job.
He put together, Ron Greenwood, a team that included Clough, Taylor, Robson, Sexton, Venables, so they could all get a grip of international football and learn from it. Howard Wilkinson suggested they did that, didn't they, with Glenn Hoddle, that his replacement was with him. We've tried it once with Sven and Steve McLaren. And do you think because it didn't necessarily work in that sense, we're afraid to go back to that and bring other coaches through and let them learn?
I think we are. I do. I just think it's a mess. I've got to say, I think it's a mess. I think we live for today, and we live in the past, really. But we just take it as a week. We ain't got any plans. Let's be honest. You could tell me, in 4 years' time, let's say that I heard Terry say, will John Terry be left with Lampard? But they might not be. What's coming through? They might still be playing for Chelsea. They might still be fit. And you'd say, that's the best we've got at that position. Now, that's in a way, yeah, it's great if he can play as well as he can and play another World Cup. But it's sad in the state you'd say, well, so what we got coming through? Nothing. And that's the concern. We just live for today. We've got no structure, I don't think.
World Cup football, South Africa, 2010.
Welcome back to Five Live Sport. I'm Mark Chapman. Tonight we're asking why English football got it so wrong and how it can improve. Chris Waddle launched an impassioned critique of the game after England's 4-1 defeat to Germany yesterday, and he's alongside me in this Johannesburg hotel room. Some more texts from you. Mark in Bedford, John Beck took my level one course. The FA courses are of poor quality, says another one. Level one is an attendance course. On my level three, I was coached to penetrate at any opportunity. Another other words, just get the ball and hit it long at any time. Our players aren't good enough technically, says John in Devon. They lack basic intelligence on and off the pitch. It's not a management issue, isn't this? Until we wake up and listen to people like Trevor Brooking, we will relive Groundhog Day every 2 years. So far this evening, we've heard the thoughts of Terry Venables, Howard Wilkinson and Mark Palios, along with Chris. Let's get the thoughts of someone who's outside the England bubble, shall we, and say good evening to the former Newcastle, Liverpool and Germany midfielder, Dietmar Hamann. Dietmar, thank you for doing this. Good evening.
Good evening.
So, what's wrong with the England players then?
I think it's hard to say in one or two words what went wrong. I just think it's a combination of... they look tired and they never really played as a team. I think they're all very good players in their own right individually for their clubs, but as a team they just haven't produced it for the last 6, 8, 10 years.
Do you think they're technically good enough, Dima?
I think each and every one of them is technically good enough to play the highest level, but they just can't seem to do it when they play together and with each other. And obviously, the part of the reason, or one of the reasons, is that the football played in the Premier League is a lot different to other countries, and obviously international football and World Cup football.
How did you find the Premier League then, compared to other leagues that you played in international football? What was the biggest difference for you?
Well, I think the biggest difference is the pace of the game. If I came to England and I needed a few games to really adapt to the pace of the game, because it was completely different than what I was used to in Germany. But as we see now in the World Cup, or in previous World Cups, it's more about ball retention, and this is where England is lacking badly, because they can't keep the ball well enough. They give it away too easy, and if you do that at the highest level against teams like Germany, Argentina, Brazil, or even Spain, you get hurt. And obviously they always have to put a lot of effort into the game, getting the ball back, and then they may lack that extra yard going forward when they get it back.
Chris, when you played in France, how much slower was the French league to the English league that you'd left?
It was completely technical. In my first couple of games, the ball went down the side. Their centre-half went across. I chased it, and nobody backed us up. None of the players sort of came with us. And I went, and I think the centre-half, I can't remember what the game, one of my first games, and I went to, the goal to play down the lane. He did a Cruyff turn, the centre-half, played across the box, and I just thought, wow. And the players went, don't chase that. Just leave it, let them have it. We'll get the halfway lane and we'll try and nick it off them from there, and we're compact and we break on teams. And when we got it, we played patient football, tried to draw people out. It was all about possession, working it, and then obviously quick. I tried to describe it yesterday as like a waltz. And, it was where English football is basically based like a Charleston. And that's how I look at it. It's just 100 mile an hour. It's wherever the ball is in England. It's like, go and press it, wherever you go. Where abroad it was, for me, it was just like, look, leave it. And you work in areas. They got the best out of the players, because I had to work a certain area. Once the ball transferred towards our defence, I didn't have to run back and help the fullback as such. I was told to find space. So the back four and the two or three, it protected the back four. They would win it, and their job was give it to us. And it was very simple. But Terry Venables did it at Tottenham the year before I left.
But Dietmar, do you think then we, the fans in England, are to blame as well? Because we demand 100 mile an hour football. We demand that you guys press the ball in every inch of blade of grass. Are we partly to blame?
I wouldn't say that the fans are partly to blame, because I think the English, or the Premier League, is the most exciting to watch in the world. I'd rather watch a Premier League game than a game in Germany, Spain or Italy. So I don't think the fans are to blame. I think it's the press maybe partly to blame, because they always hype England up before tournaments, and there's no reason to believe why they should do it, because they haven't done it since 90. They've not gone past the last 16 or the last 8. So, as a team, I think England are overrated. They're all good players, but as a team, they're overrated because they haven't shown it in the last three or four major competitions.
You say it's the most exciting league. It's not the best league, is it?
Well, I don't know whether it's the best league. I think people get carried away because English teams have done very well in the Champions League in recent years. And that may make people believe that the English league is the best, and therefore the English national team should be the best. But obviously it doesn't work like this. And, we've seen that this year, where England's been in all four games, we're pretty poor. And, only got what they deserved in the game against Germany yesterday.
Dieter, it's Chris Dieter. But you've played in Germany, obviously, for a lot of years. And, you know, I looked at the German team. I was at the game the other day. And for me, the German team play is very similar to Bayern Munich, to Werder Bremen, to Schalke. Most of the teams in that league play a certain style. In Holland, they play with wingers, as the Dutch team does. You know, they try and copy what they do in the league into a thing. Now, we go into tournaments playing where, let's be honest, what sets the Premier League is an exciting league to people is obviously the foreign players we attract now. All right, you know, Steven Gerrard players like that are obviously great to watch, but the majority of players in the English league are the foreign ones who make it exciting for us. You know, and we can't copy a Premier League game in international football. It's just not possible. And that's what, you know, the advantages that countries have on us is their league, their clubs basically have the same structure as the national team.
Yeah.
You know, we have a big problem of trying to play a 4-4-2, 100 mile an hour against quality team players, like German players we played the other day, like, you know, even Algeria. We couldn't get the ball off Algeria trying to play an English type game. Now, all right, somebody said Algeria never looked like they want to score. And when we go back to the fans demand only certain clubs you can really play the ball around, i.e. Liverpool, you could take a corner, go right back up to the 18 yard, you could go right round the field with the ball at Liverpool because they're used to watching attractive football, i.e. Arsenal, i.e. Tottenham. Yeah. But certain clubs can play any style they want because all fans say, get it in the box, get it in the box, get it in the box. Yep. So we lose quality straight away.
Did he tell us about the system you came through then? How did it work for you as a youngster? How did you come through to the prominence that you eventually reached?
Well, obviously, it's a long time ago since I've gone through my youth teams. And, you know, I wouldn't say that there's too much difference. Obviously, in other leagues, as we said, or in other countries, it's more importance based on the retention of the ball, which is not the case in England. But you know, I think the English game got a lot of great assets. You know, the pace and the intention of the game, and the intensity. But obviously, you need to, when you go to a tournament, and I'm sure all the players are capable of doing it because they do it for Chelsea, do it for Liverpool, play for Man United. When you go into Europe and play in Europe, you need to play a different game than in the Premier League, because if you don't keep the ball against the best teams, you may get away with it in England, but you don't get away on international level. And they just need to change their game when they go to major tournaments, because as Chris just said, if you keep playing the Premier League way in international tournaments, you come out second best. And maybe there's a little thing about the manager. Has he picked a team which is capable of playing that way? Because I'm sure there would have probably been players more capable of keeping the ball. If I just look at Joe Cole or Michael Carrick, should they have been in the team and change the game and play a different way than what they used to?
And you're doing your... Are you starting off on your coaching badges, are you, at the moment?
Yeah,
or have you got...
I've done the first one, done the B licence. I'm just started my A licence. And, hopefully that'll be done by the end of this season now. And, hopefully in a couple of years I've got a pro licence.
And the German authorities are backing you all the way through this. Is that, are you doing it from a German perspective rather than?
No, I'm doing these in English. I just started with the Welsh FA, the A license, and do the batches over here. I don't think there's too much difference doing them, and I do them over here.
Okay, we've had a text in about the UEFA A license. It says from somebody, I wish to remain anonymous, but I am a UEFA A license coach. It costs so much money, and for 4 weeks at Lillishall, I was on the pitches in sessions. My coaching time for me in 4 weeks was 2 hours. We are technically inferior, and as a consequence, we lack game intelligence. Two hours in 4 weeks. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, well, as I said, you could look further down. I think things need to be changed because, if you look at the last few tournaments, I watched them every game in 2006, and they got away because they played poor position, and it was the same story as today. They weren't pretty to watch, and it just grafted through games, and they just got through because Beckham scored a free kick one day, and a bit of brilliance of somebody else, and that got him through. But as a team, they didn't perform at all, and obviously you need to bring more into the youth system, the retention of the ball. You know, obviously we see the Brazilians playing tonight. They've got a discipline now, and obviously the flair they've got. And I think if you keep that intensity of the English game and bring better quality or better technically better players through the system. And, you know, I think England should be or must be a force because it is a great country and the national team at the moment just doesn't live up to it.
Well, thank you for giving us some positive hope at the end, Diddy. Good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Pleasure. Bye.
Diddy Hamandu and his coaching badges, former Liverpool and Newcastle midfielder. Let's just focus quickly on another factor England's players had to contend with at this World Cup, the fact that maybe they were just knackered.
All the players, English players, are a bit really tired at this competition. I spoke with the coaches and all the coaches told me that the situation, physical situation and the mental situation of the players was not like the players that we know.
So that's the view of Fabio Capello. Here are the thoughts of Sven-Göran Eriksson's assistant Tord Grip on why England underperformed.
If you look at other leagues in Europe, they have a long winter break. They are fresh when they start in February or whenever.
Is the winter break that important in your view?
I think so. For the international players, it's very important.
So how long would you want? 3 weeks? 4 weeks? Is that would take?
They have 2 weeks off in Italy, for instance. They have more in Germany. Realistically, perhaps, let's say, 2 weeks off from not playing any football. We discussed to have that break after Christmas because playing during Christmas time, it's a very, very big tradition in England, so it's not easy to take that away.
And is that the reason you were given for not having a winter break, the tradition of the Christmas fixtures?
Well, I don't know. We said that we could have it after Christmas, but that is something for Premier League and the FA to discuss.
Did you feel like everybody was working together during your time?
We wanted to have this winter break, but it wasn't possible.
They're the thoughts of Tor Grip then on the winter break. You were saying to me whilst Tor Grip was speaking there, Chris, it'll never happen. A winter break in this country.
Now you get full houses. Everybody takes the kids. Boxing Day games. It's been a tradition, always will be. Ours in Marseille, we closed down for 10 days. We got basically 7 to 8 days off. We got a training programme in the 7 to 8 days. We came back 2nd of January. We went up to the Alps, did another pre-season for 5-6 days, just top up. Then we played three friendlies. Then we went back in the league. So I didn't really play any less games than what I did in England. I had probably 5-6 days off, which an injured player would have. And be over for the Christmas, you don't train a lot because you're playing every sort of 3-4 days. It doesn't make any difference.
And it wouldn't happen here anyhow. Even if they did, then go with a winter break, if somehow they got it through, all the Premier League clubs would go off to Dubai or Australia or China or whatever and earn a few bob.
Exactly, and play games. So what's the point of that? It's a no-brainer.
It's interesting if you talk to the Premier League in the past over winter break, some people involved with the Premier League will say, well, the reason we can't have a winter break is because of the FA Cup. Because of the third round. So they just pass the blame that way.
If they want to preparation for a tournament properly, that year the tournament's on, start the league very early. You only need a month off in football. All this 8 weeks and all that's rubbish. You need a month tops. Players get bored, start putting a bit of weight on, you get a programme to train, but you want to get back and you want to start. Start a bit earlier, finish when there's a tournament on at the end of April. Not going into May and everything. Finish early so you set the players right. Chill out for the next 10 days, 2 weeks, then we're going to get down to serious work before we go off to the tournament and hopefully do well.
Now, before we move on from the winter break, Professor Waddle has done a little bit of research, a little slip of paper in front of him on games that players have played. Go on.
Well, I've basically worked out the teams. I go off the German team, for example, what started against England. Combination of games, all the games, totaled up is 488 between them. Now, England totaled up the team what started was 452. So the biggest was Spain on 539. Basically, Brazil, we think, could win it's 4-4-6. Argentina could win it was 4-4-9. Holland was only 4-19. And who was the other one? So USA only had 3-14.
So we're kind of slap bang in the middle, aren't we?
We're no different.
No different.
And we're talking about the German players being 20-21. So it's all, it's for me, it's all excuses. It is all utter rubbish.
So next time people bring up the winter break, quote those figures that Chris Waddle has just given you and say, we don't need a winter break. Spain have played actually more games than us going into this World Cup. Let's talk more about the manager now. He's worth £6 million a year and says he intends to see at his freshly signed contract. David Pleat had some strong words on Fabio Capello's role at this World Cup.
Forget the £6 million a year, forget all his flunkies that are carrying the boots around. I just feel that we've been conned a little bit. I have to say that. We know we've got good players, but I don't think we've maximised them, not at all.
Who have we been conned by, David?
Well, the FA have seemed to have this obsession that foreign coaches, foreign people, have some magic ingredient that no one in our country has. That's nothing against Capello. He's done marvellously well at club management. But I saw him in four games here. I didn't see him adapt tactics when the other team had the ascendancy of the game. And if the other team starts off in the ascendancy of the game, you have to do something to cope with their way they are playing.
You know how I promised you a Premier League Academy club director, yeah? His club have stopped him from talking to us this evening, so I didn't want people thinking that I'd falsely promised something, but he hasn't been allowed to talk to us, which kind of sums up a few things, doesn't it? Let's talk about Capello then. It is easy to criticise him, but in your view, what has he really done wrong?
He's fell into the trap of the system. You know, let's be honest, we're paying somebody... Was it 4 for Sven, 6 for Capello? What's the next one going to get? 8? We're just paying ridiculous wages for a job which people would basically do for peanuts. And it would be a great honour for everybody to manage England. You know, Germany don't get foreign coaches. Italy don't have foreign coaches. We do, obviously. It doesn't work. So what's the point? I mean, you could basically give anybody that squad and say, well, we'll get last 16 and quarterfinals. So, you know, where your money is, you say, right, how can I make this team better? And all I've seen him do, I'll be honest, his club record's phenomenal. You can't take that away. We qualified playing that system we've come to the World Cup with. We've been found out. Now, what annoys me is we never have a plan B. And the managers previous never had a plan B. You know, I go back to 90, when obviously I played in. We started off on 4-4-2 and thought, we mightn't get far in this tournament. So we got to 3 at the back. And all of a sudden people say, wow, you've seen this England team. Now, I didn't see him change. All he did was change player for player in the same position and do exactly the same thing. We never asked questions. We never thought, hold on, can we go 4-5-1? Can we go 3 at the back? Can we play wing-backs? How can we affect the game? We weren't, you know, people say if Lampard's goal counted, it would have changed the game. Yeah, it would have. It would have made it 2-2 for at least 15 minutes. And then we would have got beat 4-2 anyway, in my eyes. So I don't think as a coach, he's fell into the trap where you only know 4-4-2 and we can only play a certain way. You know, for the money you earn, you know, take the money away, he's fell into the same trap as previous managers, fraying to leave players out, fraying to get the balance right.
Steve Copple's put his thoughts on Bristol City's website, and he says on the manager, I believe the England national team should be managed by an Englishman. I'm not jumping on any bandwagon. I've just said that all along. Would it make us any better? No, I don't think it will, but it'll make us consistent.
Look, if you get, you know, there'll be talk, if he did move into a week's time, there'll be talk, who will it be at the minute? It'll be Harry Redknapp probably be right up the front now because of what he's done in Tottenham, which he's done great. Can get the best out of players, but at the end of the day, Harry can only play a certain system with the players we've got.
Do you know what? I'm really annoyed that we haven't been allowed to talk to that Premier League Club Academy guy. What are we doing wrong? We're just trying to have an open discussion, aren't we, about the future of English football. Anyhow, 85058 on the text, I played semi-pro for many years, says someone, before quitting with hate for the game. Any player showing flair or creative skills was an outcast and deliberately not picked. I knew many gifted players who had amazing potential and never even played at semi-pro level for this reason. Chris in London, the only reason I was always picked was because I gave in and played the English way, the simple long ball. I remember training sessions without touching a single ball. Chris Kay in Greenwich, was I watching the wrong cup? The problem is simply that we didn't play like the Premier League. We were slow and lethargic. This is an easy change to make, says Dave in concert. Stop kids playing on full-size pitches until they're big enough. At 9, all it does is encourage the kids who can't kick the ball further. Robin in Berkshire, until you get Richard Scudamore and Premier League chairman on the show, then the whole discussion is pointless. Well, I think you've just had that answered in the last 5 minutes. Steve in Reading asked this question. You're perfectly placed to answer this. Would it help if some of our English players played abroad?
I think it would. I know people don't want to see them, and I know the clubs will say, what are you trying to get my players to go and play abroad for? You're good players, But it's an eye-opener, you know. It's something you think it's a game of football like it is at home. It's not. It's completely different. The way of life's different. Culture's different. I loved it. I had 3 years. It was fantastic.
But when you said you were moving to Marseille, did people look at you as if you were mad?
I always summed up the attitude of what we think is England in general. I got the impression was, when everybody said to me, you're going to learn French, and I went, I'm going to try. And they all went, I wouldn't. I'd make them speak English. And I said, well, I'm going to live in France. And they went, yeah, but don't speak their language. Make them speak it. And I thought, that probably sums this up. We don't want to learn anything.
No.
And that goes, I'm on about football now. I'm not about education and stuff. I'm on about football. We don't want to copy it. We don't want to copy it. They think, why should we copy France? We all rave about Brazil and teams like that. But when we say, well, I'll tell you what, we could do this if we work on it for the next 10 years. 2018, we could get a team, hopefully, if we stuck from now, got all the best youngsters and coached properly all the way in. 2018, we could say, we could seriously win this. But I can tell you something now, we'll get there and it'll be, come on, this is it. And we'll go, oops, not again.
Two or three players out of this England squad to move abroad this summer, would you like?
Well, I'm not going to say it because I'll probably have managers ringing us up, slagging us off. But all the players who you think are good enough technically, it would improve them even more knowledge-wise of the game. And they'd know how to play the slower type game, going quick, going slow. Tactically, they'd be much, much, much aware. Gary Lineker learned a load. Teddy Venables learned a load as a coach going abroad. Bobby Robson learned more going abroad. Steve McLaren will come back in England and he'll know so much more. And I take my hat off to people who go abroad and work. Brilliant.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.